Taylor Report, Lee Morgan. Elvis would like that. I saw the movie Elvis. And by the way, I'm infringing on the territory of Daniel Garber at the movies. So please tune in on Saturday to Critic Circle. And Daniel's going to have a lot of stuff to be saying about the movies. But when you say Elvis, I'm afraid everybody knows about Elvis. And we have to say something, I do anyway, about him. About this film, and I've already indicated this film. I suppose we could use it as an argument against gambling. As you know, the Taylor Report's against gambling. I mean, the occasional bet, I don't mind, but it's starting to become like a people advocating what I would call an addiction. And if you don't know that addictions to gambling can kill you, or destroy you, or destroy your family, you've been sleeping. Not paying attention. And this film, of all things, I mean, its depiction of Elvis to me is just ridiculous because there's a nice young man playing him, but he could in no way in the world resemble this Elvis. Everything that Elvis did is exaggerated. And it develops all kinds of myths, but let's talk about gambling. At the core of the story, I think we're supposed to say spoiler alert, but the core of it is that Colonel Parker, who is a grifter, hustler, kind of guy you find in front of a carnival, and don't think those guys are foolish. Those guys know what they're doing. They know you better than you know yourself, just like all hustlers do. So they know how to run a con, which is what the colonel was. Somebody said to him, by the way, when they were exposing him, and this is an old story, this is not news, somebody said, well, you're not even a colonel. Well, they don't know American history. Post-Civil War, every male who made it to the age of 30 called himself a colonel because the holdover from the war was it's the most common term. Label for a big shot was colonel, so people would call themselves colonel. I have a couple of colonels in my family tree, as a matter of fact, and I love them all. So, but the colonel was an addicted gambler, and he ran up debts, the dangerous kind. Most of them, I gather, at least the debts ended up in the hands of people in Las Vegas. I think you could make an argument that culturally, Las Vegas is America's Death Star. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Get out of here, go to Nevada, you can be free. You can do what you want in Vegas. It's like there's something, the headquarters, you might say, of the devil is in Las Vegas. And the colonel has problems. So his problems are so bad that it becomes a decisive and evil, a cruel moment in the story. I don't know that the story is actually true. I'm very suspicious of everything about this film because it seems to have some agendas it's working on that I know from observing, listening, watching that or it's simply not true. But it is interesting that because of this gambling problem, it forces decisions on Elvis Presley that were damaging to his own health and integrity, you might say. I think Jerry Lee Lewis probably expressed it best. When he went down to the gate at Graceland and called on and brought a pistol, he wanted to shoot Elvis because Elvis had abandoned what he was, which was rockabilly, rhythm and blues. There was a certain sound that Elvis was the. If you put your finger on that, you had hit them. You turn on all the lights if you could do that. And Elvis could do it better than anyone. And when Parker decided to make him into a movie star and to work on his image, it really upset people who sort of, they knew what Elvis was by his sound. When the sound changed, and then also all these movies began, it was painful. So it's interesting why. I'm going to exploit the fact that that the Colonel, who is of course dominates the film, and I think that I remember a black comedian whose name escapes me, who famously walked up to the edge of to the apron of the stage that he was on, and he said, I want to make an announcement to this crowd. He says to you black people in the audience, just wait for a moment. I want to say something directly to the white members of the audience, and that is, Elvis is dead, damn it. Because Elvis was that watershed moment in American popular music. When he crossed a line, you couldn't see it, but it was there. When America was dominated by radio at one end of the dial, if you went way down to one end of the dial, you'd hear black voices. If you went the other direction, it was the Andrews sisters. And so Elvis, as we all know from the Sun Records story, was a product of a very creative individual and others who decided that they were going to solve this problem. And Elvis was one of the solutions, not the only one. Jerry Lee Lewis was one. Johnny Cash actually was involved. And the man from Blue Suede Shoes, whose name escapes me. But that was a revolutionary movement. A 60s leader of the the anti-war movement and whatnot said, we didn't come out of a Karl Marx or anything like that. He says, we came out of Heartbreak Hotel. And there was some truth in that, because the resistance to legal segregation. And legal segregation was culturally expressed by the segregation of radio television, and certain things could not be done. And the most vivid and the most living culture was expressed by black Americans. And it is a powerful international cultural expression adopted by anyone who is exposed to it. It's brilliant, and it is enlivening, and that's why there was the issue, for example, can you dance? And Elvis, the film makes a great thing of the fact that the guy could move, but I think they misrepresent it, because they seem to think that it was his ability to shake his trousers convinced everybody that he was the guy to watch. But that can't be true, because Frank Sinatra was also a cultural sensation, and he stood there, as pious and quiet as he could do, and sang his songs, and people would scream and try to touch him. So it was the sound, and the first to notice it was the Ku Klux Klan. They went crazy, because they understood that this was a threat to their cultural predominance. That this couldn't do this. It was called crossover music, but they noticed that it has a color component, and so in that sense, it was a liberating and contributed, and I believe culturally, to all the good things, Little Richard and Ray Charles, that came with it. I once, by the way, attended a concert of Ray Charles in Sacramento, and the audience was told they could not get out of their seats, though they would feel like they wanted to, but they were ordered to stay in their seats. That was a minor miracle when I think about it, and bless their hearts, they did that. But when you have cultural figures, you know, let's put Ray Charles in the mix and Little Richard and Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis, there's an expectation or this wish that they come and join whatever we believe is the great movement of the day. And this film suggests that Elvis somehow was a liberal fellow and that he was very... in the film, they put pictures of Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King in the background. To me, that's a lie. I never heard him say a thing of the sort. Please do your own homework. The notion that he was, wanted to be like the Beatles or people like that isn't him. And it was unfair. It would be unfair to ask it of him, but it's certainly also wrong to represent him as that. If you're going to mention that Elvis was somehow very shattered by the assassination of King and Kennedy, by the way, all Americans, what am I saying? People all over the world were shaken. But it did. There's no single political expression of any moment. It would be like asking, what did the Queen say, frankly? Because great individuals, so people who have these kind of reputations, are above these things, or at least their management, Colonel Parker, tell them to be above it. What the man thought is beyond me. I never saw a clear expression of any particular idea, but except stories such as, which is not in the film, is that Elvis went to visit Richard Nixon, President Nixon, and asked to become a member of the FBI. He wanted to be in the FBI. That's a true story. It's not quite well known. The people like the side aspects of it. He arrived at the gate at the White House, and of course he's Elvis, so he just walked up and he said, "I'm Elvis Presley. I want to talk to the president." President Nixon, who was busy conducting the Vietnam War and running torture camps and whatever. He was, by the way, he was considered very, people make talk about how people hate Donald Trump. They forget, Richard Nixon was a hated man by liberals, etc. So anyway, Elvis goes to the gate and he says, "I want to talk to the president." And so they buzzed the president, somebody said, and it was breakfast. It was quite early in the morning. And they said, "Mr. President, Elvis Presley is at the gate, and he wants to talk to you." And Nixon was there with his family, and he said, no, I'm not interested in Elvis Presley, and I'm very busy today." So, and his daughter said, No, you're not. "I want to meet Elvis." So it was Nixon's daughter who said to him, "You better meet him. Otherwise, it's going to be a family feud." So they brought Elvis in. So they made the conversation. And so, "What's on your mind?" And Elvis said, "I want to join the FBI. So Nixon said, "Well, we can probably arrange something." And they got him, as far as I know, they got him a badge and so that he could be in the FBI. That's my way of saying, let's... Please don't turn him to try to pretend he was some kind of liberal icon. He was like a meteor, and boy, I mean, he tore a path, and there's no doubting it. You can't take him out of the equation. He did have a nice song, and that was kind of uncharacteristic, and we can play that and give you an idea of this is called Poison Ivy League, and we'll come back and talk about some other things.
Hail to thee, old ivy league, poison ivy league. The rah-rah boys are sitting round the tables tonight. The rah-rah boys have lots of plans in view. They're gonna have plenty to raise and make their own lemonade. They'll up just like the big boys do. Poison Ivy League, poison man Ivy League, give me an itch, those sons of the rich.
I believe. The rah-rah boys will go to bed so early tonight. Before exams, they need a lot of rest. They gotta make good for dad. They gotta make good so bad. They'll even pay someone to take that test.
Poison, I believe. Poison, but I believe.
How can they flunk? They're so full of bunk. Poison, I believe. The rah-rah boys are being groomed for business someday. For better things, to college they were sent. And you can bet they'll be the head of the company as long as dear old dad is president.
Poison, I believe. Poison, that I believe.
So loaded with cash, they give me a rash. That poison, I believe. So let it be told, I won't touch them with a 10-foot pole.
That poison, I believe.
Elvis, that was a rather uncharacteristic. People don't know you. That was the songwriting Tin Pan Alley team that put that over, across for him. That's probably what he thought, by the way, of the blue collar. He's a blue collar guy. We all know he drove a truck and had truck driver's point of view on many things. He knew, like a lot of Southern boys, were working class people who were extremely shy. There was Gene Vincent was supposed to be the great guy in leather jacket and mean looking with the sideburns. By the way, that's another thing. Sideburns were the mark of people from the South and Southwest, which they proudly wore, but it was also a cultural clash. But Gene Vincent, people who met him, particularly his British fans, thought he was going to be a wild, noisy rebel. And they discovered he's an extremely shy and polite individual. He Mr. and Mrs. and thank you very much and may I, wherever he went. But when he got him on a stage, he was Bebopalula, you know, and interesting. He, of course, approached Elvis once, he said, and said, hey, I'm sorry, man, I'm taking some of your stuff. And Elvis said, have at it, who cares? Elvis did not do that in a patronizing way. He said, go ahead, make, you know, good for you. Spread the word. Anyway, this is the Taylor Report. I bet you were wondering. CIUT 89.5 FM.